Okay, welcome back. I've been trying to produce a new podcast every other week, and if you notice that, you also notice that this one's coming out a little late. I've been enjoying some time away with the family. I'm happy to be back. Continue on my mission to be the most accurate, accessible, and affordable source of information on college football recruiting. If you like what we're doing, if you're getting some value out of it, instead of money, you can pay me back for it by thinking of someone that you know that would also like it, and just telling them about it, encouraging them to give it a shot. Your recommendation means a lot to me. Today, I have on my first repeat guest, Issa Abdul-Qaddous. Issa played FCS football and spent 6 years as a safety in the NFL. We touch a bunch of interesting topics like life as an NFL player, NFL contract negotiations, and the drug culture on football teams. I loved it. Hope you guys do too. If you notice some sound quality issues, a little clicking noise, apologize for that in advance. Issa was energetic and I think probably knocking the mic a little bit with his finger. Just wanted to give you the heads up. I'm sure you'll enjoy it nonetheless. All right, we got Issa back. What's going on?
Not much, man. Just glad to be here. What's going on with you?
Well, yeah, as I just told you, I'd come back from vacation. I'm ready to get back and motivated and focused on this project, and so happy to have you back. I know I every time I end an episode, I always say, well, I'd love to have you back and keep on talking. This is the first time though I'm getting someone back on for the second time, so I'm pretty happy about it.
Oh yeah, man, I'm honored to be your second time guest.
Yeah. So when we last left off, you know, we talked a lot about your football career and, you know, how it ended with your injury. Give me an update. How are things going with your recovery and the process of getting back at it?
I'm still rehabbing my arm. You know, it's been a long process. It's still going to be a long process. You know, nerve injuries take forever to heal. So, you know, I'm just taking it one day at a time, trying to get my arm right. But also in the meantime, you know, I'm trying to find my purpose again. You know, like, I knew football wasn't my purpose, but as a kid, it felt like my purpose, you know? So, like, I'm trying to get past that mindset I had before and open it up to what I'm supposed to be doing with my adult life and stuff. So, you know, that's been in the way of, you know, giving back, I've been going to schools, volunteering just to hang out and help kids with work and stuff, you know, trying to share the lessons that I learned and the stories that I've learned throughout the journey and everything like that, and try to put it on perspective.
Well, yeah, so like I remember that from our last conversation, and then that gave me the inspiration to try to reach out to you to see, you know, how we could work together to use the platform that we've already created to give you an opportunity to get that message out. And I know we're working on, you know, dropping a few videos, and first one coming up soon. Take me through your thought process and like when I came to you with that idea, what you thought of it and how we've gotten to where we've gotten now.
I mean, I thought it was excellent. I mean, I thought it was great for me because it was the first time I was able to like go from just the thought of it into like putting it into action. You know, like it was just an idea. You know, I was on pause for a while because of this injury and how my schedule was and how I really didn't know much about my next life, what I wanted to do. I was a full-time football player and I made sure that I maximized my potential in that. So I always had my mind on that. So, you know, when you like asked me that, you know, it was more of a opening of, you know what, I can make something of this, you know, like let me start doing it instead of just theorizing it and making it seem like it's something that I could possibly do. Let's like make it an actual reality. So, you know, it's been a better journey, a great journey, because I'm starting to put order to that chaos that I knew of my career.
Yeah, I find that just generally with life, I try not, you know, I try to be planful and make sure that the things I'm doing are going to be great. But, you know, I think sometimes the best way to do that is just kind of start to dive in, and all the things that you think you know that it's going to take and like to make your plans, you're going to know way more after you just start trying, you know? And so just getting out there and doing it, you know, will be the thing that helps you to figure out how to do it best.
Yeah, for real. You know, just applying yourself and just using your skills that you have and just figuring it out along the way is going to be more valuable than just like thinking about what it would be like, you know?
Yeah. So what's your goal? What's your goal with like this process of getting the information out of your head and into the heads of, you know, young athletes?
Honestly, my goal is just to give the most truthful rendition of what I went through, you know, because I don't want to tell somebody what's good or bad for them. I just want to tell them what it is so they can make the decision for themselves. You know, like I know that there were many things that I was told about the NFL. I was told about recruiting. I was told about college that I knew what I didn't like, but I didn't care because my dream was on playing that, you know? So like, I don't want to get anybody steering away from anybody. I just want to get people to understand what you are dealing with when you get to these certain places and what you have to know, what lessons you have to learn, what's going to help you strive in this way, opposed to just like, you know, telling you what's good or bad for you. I just want to let you know what it is so you can make a decision for yourself.
So do you think that these are things that are mostly the reason, like, are these the things that you always knew and like kind of got you to where you got to? Or is it the things that you learned along the way that, like, if you wish, like, you're like thinking, if I knew this 10 years ago, it would have been totally different and it would have been better. And I just want to help people with that. Like, is it one or the other or both? Or how do you think about it?
I think me coming up through my football career, I was so one track minded on football that I was doing whatever that would serve football, you know? So like, I kind of like unconsciously made the right decisions because it was in line with football in a sense, you know what I mean? And now looking back, I kind of understand how some of them were right and also how some of them were wrong when it comes to like my integrity and how I had to keep moving on myself and how I was treating myself and my own value and stuff like that. So I think it came from reflection and also, you know, recognizing certain things throughout the journey, you know?
Do you think that, you know, I wonder, it's interesting, like you have this perspective, right? Like you made it. In like the large sense, like you think of like every athlete that's playing, you know, peewee football. Actually, I know we talked about it last time, you know, every athlete, like in their mind, they're thinking like there's this dream that like, and like you got there and for, yeah. You know, only one out of every probably 10,000 of those people with that dream is the one that's going to get there. And it's an interesting thing because you got there, you're the person that someone's going to listen to.
Yeah.
But in a weird way. From like a reality standpoint, like you're probably the worst, you know, in some sense, like, you know, the one of the worst people for them to talk to, because like they're more likely to be one of the 9,999.
Yeah. You
know, but in another sense, like there's so much to learn from the person that does make that jump, because whether or not like they end up reaching the success in the way that you did in the thing that they're thinking about, I think just that skill set that and that mindset that got you from A to B, you know, even if it doesn't help them to get to the NFL, is still the thing that's going to help them to become the best father or the best, you know, husband or the best, you know, whatever else it is that becomes important in their life as they get older. So I, or best student or thing that they're doing right now.
Yeah. You know, the way I always looked at it was that, like, I've always played football my entire life from 7 years old till I played 27, till I was 27 years old. But it wasn't until I got to the NFL that people cared that I played football, you know, that I was doing the same thing. You know, maybe I learned different principles to adjust to the game. But throughout the entire time, I've been playing football. I've been this person. So in a sense, I became this process, which was football and which was about improving in it and getting better. And it wasn't really about me playing in the NFL. It was about me playing this sport in a sense how I could took the same passion and integrity to accounting, where I said, you know, I want to be the one accountant that's the best accounting in the world, where I'm doing accounting for Google, accounting for Apple and everything like that, you know. But it's just the principles I feel like that was to take it to the elite that got me there. The idea of saying that I can be the one of 10,000, not just being one person in 10,000, thinking about, hey, I can be that one person. And if I just follow the people that are setting the way for you, because they want you to be that as well. And if you just kind of follow that path, you can kind of become one of that 10,000 and you realize that it's not really an elite thing. It's just a kind of principle thing, a process that was followed, a way of thinking, a way of improving, a way of life, almost more so than it is about being elite and upper echelon. It's more so following a process of greatness.
Yeah, you said something early on there that really made me think. You said that like no one cared about the fact that you played football, and I'm sure there's like that's to some degree until you made it to the NFL. I'm actually so curious as to like what happened, what kind of switches switched when like you made an NFL team with like the way you felt like people treated you. I know we talked about it like briefly the last time where you'd said like your friends, like you felt like nothing really changed there, but I got to imagine that there's like a sphere of people like that you're really close to that like will always be like you're just like boys with, and like it's just like it doesn't matter what you guys are doing, but there's probably like everyone else in the world where things change dramatically. And I'm just curious if that's true at all. And if so, like what that's like.
Yeah, so up till I was 22, when I told somebody I played football, they didn't care. It was just, oh, play college, and it's like, yeah, whatever. But once I got into the NFL and I became a rookie in the NFL, when I told people I played in the NFL, their faces lit up. You know what I mean? This is the first time anybody ever reacted like this for me playing football. And that's the only thing that stayed the same, was that my natural progression was to go from college to pro. And that's just the sake of my career and what could happen next for me in my football career. You know what I mean? But now all of a sudden, now I'm in this league. And I've been playing football for already 15 years, since I was 7 years old. You know what I mean? So now all of a sudden, people see me and they're like, oh my God, I'm so happy that you play football. Oh my, you're an inspiration. But in reality, I've been a football player. But it's just this title that made people think that I was important. You know what I mean? So I kind of always had that perspective of understanding that I'm not really special. Just the place that I'm playing football at is special. And granted, yeah, I made it. It's special to get there. But at the end of the day, I never changed who I was. I've been special since the whole time I was playing, because I was, in a sense, destining myself for the NFL. You know, but yet when people kind of see me as an NFL player, they're more excited about me being there. Now they want to hear about my story than they were when I was just a college football player. And they didn't care about my story. They didn't really care if I played football, because they didn't think that was going to come of anything. You know, so I always had that in my mind, that the title is more important than what I'm really doing. It's not really what I'm doing, because I never changed. It's just the title and the organization that I'm playing for that made me seem more important.
Yeah, I can relate to that in a lot of ways. I think just being a college football coach, you know, you can just imagine that, like, I run into people all the time. Let's say they're like in finance or whatever they're in, but they love football. And when you tell them that you're a college football coach, you know, the eyes light up in that same way. You know, sometimes, I mean, some people don't give a shit, but, you know, yeah. But for some people, they really do. And it's a really weird thing. And I wanted I'll get back to you. But like, for me, I could feel that if someone knew me, like, especially if they knew me tangentially, like they weren't like my best friend, but they were like, let's say like a friend of my dad's or something like that. I felt like that they wanted me to be the head coach of an NFL team, not for me, but for them. So they could like say, I know this guy. They wanted to like be able to see me on TV and point out to their friends that they know that person. Really? And I guess like to a small amount, I like resented that probably. And, I probably tried to, you know, eventually I think I got over it and started to ignore it better. But I was like, I just want to say, like, if you just knew what it took for me to get as far as I've gotten, and, you know, even if I'm coaching a school that you don't know that well, like, this has been really hard, and like, I'm really proud of myself for being where I am. And you're like, you're already like 100 steps ahead. You know, there was some resentment there, but I was wondering, like, for you, when you started, when you actually like crossed over that threshold where like people were just like in love with you immediately because of your football playing and being on an NFL team, what did you like? How did that make you feel? Like, did you have any of that kind of resentment or any other kind of emotion?
I thought it was very fake. You know, I feel like that was the first time I was dealing with like blatant fakeness, you know, because I thought that people were treating me truthful before when they didn't care. That's how it was, you know? Like, nobody cared that I played football. That was honestly how y'all cared about me. But all of a sudden, now I had this title attached to my name that everybody cared about me. That's fake to me. That's not real. That's not authentic. You know what I mean? Now you want to hear about my story, but just when I wasn't an NFL player, you didn't care about my story. So it kind of made me start like weeding out who's real people, who's fake people, you know? Who's like kind of in awe of what I'm doing and who's just and proud of me, you know what I mean? And just like kind of being able to understand who's trying to leverage what I have and who's just happy to be around me and just want to be a friend of mine, you know what I mean? So I think that just seeing that, crossing that threshold and seeing how certain people treated me and how other people didn't change how they treated me helped me understand what real and fake was.
Did you feel like you had to like get your guard up at all? Like you had said like people trying to leverage you, meaning like that you just had to be aware of people that were trying to get something out of you?
Yeah, I always understood, because I guess my relationship with people before I got to the NFL, that, you know, I had my close-knit friends, people that I trusted, people that I understood, and I understood the type of way that they would be, instead of like them being extra nice to me, giving me things and assuming that they're my friends. So when people would try to like leverage me with giving me things and bringing me places and stuff like that, I would always have my back in my mind that, yo, they're trying to leverage me for something. And it's always just waiting for them to hear what they want to do. And most of the time I just give them a no, or, well, thank you for bringing me out here, but I'm good. Or we don't have to speak again, or whatever the case may be. If you feel offended that I'm saying no to you, but I'm perfectly fine with dealing with people in that dynamic, because I understand that they were leveraging me for something. So as I'm going through it, once they come and show their hand, I'm just going to respectfully tell them no. I'm not going to feel like I've been manipulated, because I knew that the love wasn't real at the beginning.
Yeah, so it's like you almost like develop like a detector for it when you say like, okay, this person is not acting like my friends act. And yeah. So I know something's fucked up. You know what I mean? Like, I know, like there's just something not right here.
And it always going to come up. You know, I'm not going to force it. I'm not going to sit there and say, what do you want? You know, just let time show. And time always proves right, that they always wanted something. And they feel like when they usually try to wait till you're comfortable with them for them to ask you something. You know what I mean? So I always wait for that time and wait for them to see what they're going to say and try to see what favors they're going to try to leverage over me to say that I have to do something for them. You know what I mean? So it's just always in the back of my mind knowing that at some point they're going to try to use all this nice behavior towards me to help themselves out.
Yeah. Either. Yeah. Did you ever feel like that was like a burden to have to just be that way, to like always like have that filter on around people, that you felt like, you know, most people don't have to like worry about that all the time. You know, I imagine like really rich people kind of do probably. And, you know, people that are in celebrity kind of positions, you know, yours is somewhat of a celebrity type position, but like, I feel like that like ruins your experience in some level, you know, living.
Yeah. It ruins trust. You know what I mean? It kind of like, usually when you don't have anything at stake and you kind of just like a person, you don't really feel afraid to trust somebody, you know, because like you don't really have much to lose. You don't assume that they see some value in you that they could take from you, whatever the case may be. So you can just more openly trust somebody when you relate with them, you know. But now that I know I have something, I know people are trying to find ways that we relate so they can be my friend, so they can use my leverage or whatever the case may be. So it's more so just trying to find who's just trying to hang out with me because they just enjoy hanging out with me. And who likes hanging out with me because I can do something for them. You know what I mean? And I only wanted to hang with people that enjoyed hanging out with me because we would have a good time together. We would laugh. We would go watch sports. We'd do whatever. But it was just an enjoyable day. That's the people I wanted to be around. Not the people that were able to just do things for me. And we don't really connect outside of whatever they're doing for me.
Do you think that you've made less friends since you turned 22 than most people would have because of that?
For sure. I mean, I feel like even through the NFL, I didn't make as many friends that I thought I would. You know, a lot of my friends stayed from college and high school and stuff like that. And like people I've met along the way were, you know, I made tons of friends, like maybe like 20, like good friends that I could say that were good people, you know, from my football career and everything. But, you know, I feel like, it would have been more easy to meet people without this title, because it would have been more of an equal playing field. But it was a lot of people that I had to like either only be friends with them because we was on an equal playing field, or somebody I didn't really care about anything that was going on. Like I didn't care. Like they didn't care about I was playing in the NFL. They didn't care that I was rich. I didn't care if they was poor or they were struggling or they was doing great. It was just the fact that we enjoyed being around each other. And those are the friends that I still hang out to this day.
Yeah. Did you, I forgot what I was going to ask, but I was going to relate it. Like, there's like I don't know how relatable this is, but I'm going to try. I like to travel. And one of the things I really love about traveling is getting a chance to see other cultures and like really like, I like to meet local people and see how they're living and really try to get into it. And I found that some countries, like for particular, like I went to Sri Lanka, which is like off the coast of India. It's like a little country, a little island country. And I found it really difficult to enjoy my time there because when you're there, like you stand out. There's not like a ton of American looking people walking around. And so no one looks at you and be like, I bet they live here. No one's thinking that. And, you know, because of, I think, the disparity in wealth between countries, you know, they, you know, when they look at you, their eyes light up and they see like money, you know, and that's like what they're seeing immediately. And, you know, even if half the population they know you, you know, like they would have like a good relationship with you if you would give them a chance, just because there's the other half that you know are just like always trying to get after you. It like raises your guard. You don't want to like form like these relationships. You like you're more reluctant to like start a conversation because you know it's like got a 50-50 shot of going in this really dark place that you're not interested in. And so like as a result, like I left the country I spent 11 days in really without feeling like I ever got a good like feel for what it's like to be Sri Lankan. And that was such a bummer. Like that's like my favorite part of traveling. And I think that that really ruined my experience there. And I don't know, I feel like I for me, it would be like terrible to feel like I had to just live that way.
Yeah. You know, and it is a little bit of a prison, you know, you kind of trying to find a ways that you can be comfortable in your life, you know, like, oh, I'm a homebody, you know, I know it's, I'm going to be comfortable and everything that's going to be around because I know that I'm not going to have people in my house trying to leverage me. You know what I mean? And I know certain I'll go into a place where I know that I don't have to be an NFL football player. I could be a regular guy like supermarket or go out at night. I go to a bar. I'm not the NFL player hosting the bar. I'm just a guy there. You know what I mean? So it's like I look for that because I don't want to be somebody that has to be on edge and always have to be protecting myself because that's not the human experience. You know what I mean? That's not at all. That's like, that's a fake faux experience. You know, what you're supposed to have is true connection and being there and being safe, just no matter how much money you have or how you live and just be a person, you know? So like, I completely understand that.
Yeah. It's such an odd thing too, because I feel like, that recognition and that celebrity, but that, that having made it and having be that person that everyone like really is excited to meet and look up to, I feel like is a major draw of wanting to be an NFL player in the first place. I mean, I think there's the million other reasons, but it's like, I think that like, it feels like a draw until you have it. And then it feels like such a curse.
Yeah. I mean, one thing, I never wanted that football. When I first stepped on the field, I just loved it and I wanted to take it as far as I could. And I just like, you know, I kind of like passioned myself off of players that had the same passion that just about being great, you know. But a lot of people play for just the celebrity, you know, to get the endorsements and get all this stuff. And I play for the genuine organic love of football, honestly, you know what I mean? So like that was always something I knew I had to deal with that I didn't know what it was going to be like until, you know, I got there and started understanding how people wanted to leverage the celebrity and how certain people were just playing for that, you know, teammates included, you know, that they only wanted to get their brand better, bigger, not really about loving football and playing football and winning games. It was more so about getting this personal brand out because, you know, their heroes were Deion Sanders and these different people that turned their football career into a huge brand and stuff. But, you know, I guess it was a bit easier for me to stay like goal oriented because my goal was just to be great in football. It wasn't about trying to maximize my profits off the field.
Did you ever like intentionally when you met new people try to hide the fact that you were playing in the NFL?
Always. I mean, that I would, if people asked me what I was doing, I would just say I play football and I would make them pry out of me that I played in the NFL. Like I wouldn't tell the people that I did that. You know, I wanted it to be as normal as a conversation that we could have before it has to be found out that I play in the NFL, because I know the track is changing. The conversation is changing. All the energy is changing. How they see me as a person now changes too, you know? So like, I want to be able to establish, say, look, I'm a regular guy first that plays in the NFL. So you don't think that I'm an NFL player and now you have to staple all your questions and our cold conversation around me playing football and being in the NFL. You know, so like I always try to lead with human connection. What's going on? What are you? Or where are you from? Oh, you have a family? You know, those type of things. And then when we have to, we get into what do we do for a living, which I don't even like asking other people. You know what I mean? Because it's like, that's not really who you are. That's just something you do. You know what I mean? There's so much more to you. So I always try to make that type of connection first, just a human connection first before whatever I do to make money is said. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's actually, I've thought about that a lot when I meet people. There's like patterns, depending on where you live, I feel like, what part of the country you live in, there's different types of questions that are like expected openers, you know what I mean? And as far as starting a conversation with new people you're meeting. But I feel like in the Northeast, living in the New York area, asking people like what they do is like that's the question. And I've tried to make a habit of asking people to tell me about themselves. Because for some people, that is like a really interesting thing that they're passionate about, like what they do for a living is that. But it allows them to tell me about the thing that they are actually interested in wanting to talk about, I feel like.
Yeah, for sure. You know, they'll tell you about what's important. If their job is the most important thing, then that's what they'll lead with. If their family, that's what they'll lead with. But you don't box them into a question of what do you do for a living? Because right. then that makes you a value of one thing. You know, you tell me what's important to you right then and there. That tells me more about your life than it does when you tell me your job, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's always the thing is like, how do you figure out how to get to know people and give them a chance to open up? It's a good skill. It's interesting. You know, I feel like it allows you to like really get into other people's lives, which allows you to learn from their experiences in ways that you otherwise wouldn't.
Yeah, fully. Especially because you start unbiased.
So with all that in mind, you said like that you, even with other guys on NFL teams, I would picture that if you were afraid of like those kind of connections, like having to meet people and them like being, you know, wide eyed over the fact that you play in the NFL, that it might be easier to build relationships with, you know, teammates. But then you had mentioned that you felt like that was harder too. I'm curious as to why you thought that was.
I think it was like a outside in kind of thing. You know, I've always felt like being undrafted, especially the lockout year, and being from a small school where literally I'm the only player in the NFL from the school. Now that, you know, we have Chase and, you know, the dude was John was there as well. And there was a bunch of different guys. But it was like my experience as a football player was completely different than everybody else's. Like I'm playing with people from the SEC, from the Big Ten, from all these big schools where they've been football players. Football was precedent in their life, and this is what they were made to think was most important. Everybody told them was most important. They were given all the abilities and the benefits to become the best football player that they possibly could. But from my experience, that was never my case at Fordham. You know, football was not the most important thing to people on campus. It was not they didn't really care. I mean, it wasn't until like I left college until like food meal plans was like mandatory, you know what I mean? So like we used to have to pay for food. Like it wasn't like we had the royal treatment on campus, but most other guys did, you know? So like my mind was a little different. I kind of looked at this as a privilege, as they looked at it as something that was supposed to happen. It was a natural progression for them, you know what I mean? So like they kind of looked at the world a little more, oh, this is for me. And me was more, I need to find my way in here. I didn't want to get mixed up in a lot of people's cycles because a lot of people just click up and then just do a kind of, you know, fraternity boy-esque things that, you know, you did. They had money. These guys got drafted, so they had signing bonuses, their salary, so they were spending money. And I didn't have money like that my first couple years, like, you know, so I wasn't going to be out there spending $1,000 every weekend, buying big cars and stuff like that. So, like, my whole journey was different. So it had me kind of be more reserved because there's not many people that I connected with that were on a similar journey as me.
Yeah, I imagine that, like, you know, like there's a lot of players in the NFL that were probably in somewhat of a similar journey, you know, probably a handful per team, guys coming from small schools that are near the ends of the you know, that are near the bottom of the roster. So they're not making like the crazy money. But I feel like that when you're in those positions, it's so transient. And the league in general is just so transient. But I think especially when you're in one of those spots, like you could be on the roster 1 week and then off the roster the next week and be on a different team. You're like, and so it's probably harder to form bonds and relationships with those people because they're like in and out.
Exactly. And then there's also that some people are so secure on the team, you know what I mean? That they're locked in for 4 years and they're guaranteed money for 4 years. So they're going to be there for 4 years. And, you know, my mindset was, I'm sorry, with special teams guys, with people that was in my position, a lot of them was back into the roster. You know what I mean? It was week to week, but then they had that mentality of week to week. My mentality was, I want to be there for 4 years. But so like, I was in the middle of the guys that was on the way out, but also wanted to be as established as the guys that was all the way in as well. So like, I was in a limbo. I couldn't really connect with the guys that were in my position because their mindset was a little different than mine. Their mindset was more, let me just play special teams and make this team. And mine was, let me find a way to be a starter. You know what I mean? But yeah, I can't go hang out with the starters because they're spending and living a different life and speaking a different language that I'm not ready for. And I don't like going into situations where I can't take care of myself. You know what I mean? I don't want to go out and the bill's $10,000 and I got to go be stuck with it and I can't pay for it. Like, you know, I don't like being in situations like that, you know? So it was just more so like me being in the between of being at the bottom of the roster, but me wanting to be at the top of the roster and knowing that I can't connect to anybody until I get to the place that I want to be, you know? And granted, I have friends. It's not like I don't have like people that I can talk to. It's just that I don't have like close relationships with people from the NFL because I had a mission mindset more so than like connecting and communicating. It was just like trying to get to where these guys that were starters and had financial security and had security on their job instead of like being a guy that was on the back of the roster just barely making a team every year.
Yeah, and then this is something I've been thinking about a lot. I'm thinking about it closer to college sports, and I'm thinking about how athletes make decisions on where they're going to go to college. And mm-hmm. I think about, you know, what goes into the decision and how can it be made better. You know, part of it is like a complete lack of information. I mean, the average high school senior that's looking at colleges to go to probably only knows about like 20 or 25 schools. You know what I mean? Like that they actually know practically anything about, and there's 1,000. So there's first like a complete lack of information, and then there's also, you know, they don't have a process to be able to make great decisions. And so at the end of the day, like most athletes probably end up at a school that's not the right one for them for a million different reasons. But I actually wanted to pick your brain on I actually have no idea what goes into the process of deciding what NFL team you're going to play for. And I don't know what, I mean, you were undrafted, so yep. So that means that you had like a choice from even the get-go. And then along your career, like at the end of every season, there's probably like a decision to be made, you know, am I staying? Am I going? If I'm going, where am I going? So like, I don't know, that's like a big thing. Why don't you talk to me first about like you're undrafted, the draft ends, and I imagine like a handful of teams are calling you, but you tell me, I don't really know.
Yeah, so I was in the dark just like you're in right now, right before the team started calling me, like after the lockout. So the draft was in April, and the news in the NFL was as soon as the draft ended, the lockout was going to begin again. So that means undrafted rookies can't sign. So the draft ended, I didn't get drafted, and the lockout continued again. So it's like May 1st, whatever the case may be, and I'm back in the dark and just a regular guy in a sense like that. Then comes July, like 27th. You know, my agent maybe called me 2 days before saying the lockout's about to end, so be ready to start figuring out where you're going to go and everything like that. Then the news hits that the lockout ends. And I think they signed the papers, and it was like an hour. Maybe it was like 7 p.m. that the lockout actually ended and where the coaches could start calling the undrafted rookies and stuff. So I started getting calls. I got one call from the Saints. I got a call from the Rams, and a call from the Giants. And, you know, they're pitching me. You know, they're telling me, oh, yeah, I want you to come here. I want to do this. We're going to get you to whatever, the sign-up bonus that people match you to get here. We want you to get here, whatever. And, you know, at the same time, these coaches and these organizations are calling my agents and stuff. So I'm listening to these coaches. Some coaches are telling me they want me a lot. Others are just being very formal and, yeah, we want to bring you in for a tryout. Some coaches like, oh, yeah, we want to get you out here. I think you can make this team. You can really help us and stuff like that. So, like, my mind is like, oh, I want to play for that guy. You know, I want to play for the people that really want me. So then, like, after I filled all the calls, I talked to my agent, and my agent is on some, all right, these are the options you got. The Rams are the team that were, like, really interested that wanted me to come in. I talked to the GM, I talked to the people, and they like you, but there's not much room on the roster, so you just be a camp body, you'll be up out of here. But the Giants, you might have a chance of making it, but it's all right. But the Saints is a place where there's a lot of old safeties. They always have a history of taking undrafted rookies, so you have the best chance that if you play well of making a team organically and being there and establishing something because they take your type of players. They have a bunch of old safeties there now that they would love to bring a young guy in to, you know, develop him into becoming a player, you know. So when it came down to it, the Saints was the best option for me because I had the best opportunity to make the team, you know. So ended up making that team. So then fast forward.
Let me stop you because I have like a million questions.
Okay, go ahead.
How it sounds like your agent was like instrumental. How'd you find him? What like was your relationship like? You know, how did you build that trust? How does that work?
Going into my senior year, I started getting agents like interest on me. You know, that's when they could start talking to you, and like you can't sign until after the season, but they could start like having conversations and recruiting you in a sense. So I had maybe like 4 or 5 agencies that were like after me. This agency in particular, I met through my godfather because he had maybe his cousin or his like nephew or something like that, or like a family friend's son or something like that, played basketball. And he was looking for an agent, and this agency was just expanding into basketball. So he was like their first basketball client. And my godfather told the agent about me in football, and they knew me. And that's when they started contacting me. And I started hearing from them and then just started learning about them, learning the players they had in the NFL. They met with me. They sent me prospective packages. And really the understanding through like the vibe and the like where we had an interaction and stuff like that, I could tell that they were like practical people. It wasn't like they weren't saying, here's a loan for $5,000, $50,000, go buy a chain, go get a car. It was like, EC, we want you to do the right thing with your money. We want to get you on a team. We want to just make sure we're going to put you in the best position to play football. They weren't selling me on all the outside stuff. They were selling me on the fact that they could get me in the NFL. And that's all I wanted. My agent, there was 2 agents that were like working together with me. One was older. He's like, he's been in the game since like the 70s. And like, you know, so he has a lot of like, he knows all the guys. He knows all the GMs and everything like that. And then there's another younger guy, which actually was a Fordham law grad. And he's like he was actually like my age, and I still talk to him every day. And they were the two team. They were the team that, in a sense, like, you know, took care of me. So like, I knew that the older agent had all the connections, and I knew that this younger agent was being vetted by this older agent, and he also cared. He would sit there and be practical with me. He wouldn't say, Issa, I'm going to tell you whatever you want to get me to sign. It was just, I'm going to tell you the truth. You're going to be a late round pick. You might go undrafted, but I'm going to get you on the team, and all you have to do is perform. Once you get you on the team, it's in your boat. That's exactly what he said, and that's all I ever wanted. All I wanted was an opportunity, and I felt like my best chance in getting an opportunity was signing with this agency.
Yeah, and were the other agencies, like, as you described it, like, saying, were there other people that were saying, like, listen, we can give you $50,000, and was that, like, reality for you?
Yeah, they were pitching me more things outside of football than they were of football. There was just being an agent, but it was more so about endorsements, taking care of me, you know, just things that didn't have to do with getting me on a team. You know, it was more so about the fluff, not really about me getting in an NFL roster and proving myself.
Do you think that the agent that you signed with, do you think that they just understood you better and pitched you in the way that you needed to be pitched because like that's just your personality, or do you think that that's just who they are and who you are was just a good fit?
I think who I am and who they are was just a great fit because they were going to pitch me to everybody. But the thing was, if they're pitching, they're listening. Whoever's listening is listening because they have a reputation here. You know what I mean? But they only wanted to sign me because they knew I really wanted to play in the NFL and that I had the drive and the passion to go become great. I wasn't there yet, you know, but they knew I had the drive and passion. So it was like, all right, I know I can vouch for this guy because I know that he has the passion to want to play. So like, it was just the fact that it made perfect sense because all I ever wanted to do was play, and all they wanted to do was put people in positions to play. So it was just like a match made in heaven.
Yeah. So like 90% of what I know about agents, I learned from the movie Jerry Maguire. So I know basically nothing. I could picture like that there's like that either the agency or the agent themselves, you are either like their big fish or you're their little fish. I imagine that is kind of a thing where like if your agent has most of their clients are getting $10 million a year kind of contracts and you're like just struggling to make a team, that you'll probably get a little bit less of their attention. Where were you, like, for your agent, like, how many players did they represent? What kind of players were they? And then for their agency at large, like, and how did that factor into your decision, if at all?
This was probably the hook and liner for me. You know, like, this is a big agency. This, I didn't sign with some small agency. This is like a big agency, but they're like not Drew Rosenhaus. They're like the NFL starter that doesn't really have the biggest brand, but they're NFL starters, they're good players. So, you know, they have a big agency, big high paid profile players and everything. But I can never, there's never a time I can't get in contact with my agent. There's never a time he acts like I'm not precedent and I'm not primary. So like they balance it well with having got everybody feel important. So it wasn't like a lot of the guys' pitches to me was, oh, the agency you're signing was big. You're going to get lost there. And like, I'm just one guy. I only have like two clients. So, you know, I'm going to give you all my attention. But I never had that problem with my agency because they, anytime I needed something, I was able to call them. They would call me about opportunities. You know what I mean? They would tell me, hey, Issa, you need to do this. Hey, Issa, I found this for you. You know, it wasn't just like me, a guy on a roster. I'm not making the money, so they're not worrying about me. Every single chance they had to put me in a better position, they did. And they wanted to maximize the value of every single player because anybody on their roster was like family to them.
Yeah. How many players do you think that your particular agent, your contact, is that like the younger guy? How many players was he working with, do you think?
He probably like 10 to 15. Now he's probably at like 20 to 30. You know? Yeah. So he has a lot. He deals with a lot of people and stuff. But, you know, it's a... He does it very seamlessly. You know, I know that we can't sit here and talk for 4 hours or like I can't take him borrowing for 4 days, you know, because I know he has other clients and stuff like that. But whenever I need to get a question answered and I need to have or I need to vent or I need anything, he's there. If I need 2 hours, yeah. If I need 4 hours, yeah. But like as long as I needed him, he was there for me, you know. So he does a great job of balancing his time and balancing his clients.
Yeah. Now, if he was representing other safeties, like I don't know if he was or wasn't, do you think that there could create like a conflict there where like, let's say there's the Rams need a safety and you're a safety and he's representing another safety that he kind of has to try to sell both of you or one instead of the other? Did you ever think about that? Or I don't know if that was even a thing.
Nah, I think it was all of a market thing. You know, like I think he had enough clients. There's enough teams out there. There's enough jobs that say one safety was needed on the Rams and you had two safeties. One could go over there and then the other one could go to the 49ers or the Cardinals. They had that access where it wasn't just like, if you can play, they was going to get you on a team. It wasn't like you had talent and you wasn't going anywhere because your agent was screwing you over, you know? So like, I never really had to think about him choosing clients over me because I knew that they was going to find positions for everybody that they had.
Yeah. And like, all right. So to take, I'm going back to you're making a decision on what team when you chose the Saints. Like I'm trying to relate this to like a normal job search for a normal person. And I wonder like if it's relatable at all, but like I would imagine that there's different factors. There is the odds that like this move will help you to advance in your career, right? Like that they'll sign you to like a good contract and that you'll be able to grow there and become like the starter that you ultimately want to become. Then there's also like location. I imagine that like that could be a factor. All else being equal, you probably would rather be in Miami than Green Bay or something like that. I don't know, but perhaps. And then the third thing would be money. Like I can't imagine, I don't know how it works, but are all these teams offering you like the same amount of money to go to camp with them? Or tell me about it. I don't really know.
Point, yeah, it was like my sign up was like $5,000. That was like my market at this point. Everybody was gonna give me $5,000, so like I think all three teams was like $5,000 and stuff like that. And but it was just the thing about like I would say that connected to like a job and a job interview and a job like search and everything like that was just that like it was kind of finding the perfect fit for me. Like I knew that I was undrafted. I knew that I had a skill set. I knew I was a special teams player. So I needed to go to a team where they appreciated undrafted, small school, special teams players. You know, like the Rams didn't appreciate that. They wanted guys that was going to be able to be big time playmakers off the rip. The Saints appreciated guys like that because they had Lance Moore. They had Pierre Thomas. They had Courtney Roby. All these undrafted guys that ended up becoming big time players for them, and they was a part of their system. They had no problem with doing that. You know what I mean? So I felt like the Saints were the best place for me to have a fit and grow because their mold and their like mission statement almost stated that I'm supposed to be there in a sense, you know?
Yeah, it's like they had both the reputation and like the messaging that said that they wanted guys that had like the potential to develop into starters, but that was like only part of the equation. If they could be impact players in a small role, that they really valued that in a way that maybe other teams didn't, and you felt like that was probably like the fit for your skill set and where you were.
Exactly. I mean, I'm undrafted. I came from a small FCF school, Fordham, where we didn't play anybody. Everybody that I played that played 1AA played a 1A school. I never played a 1A school in college. You know what I mean? They played a 1A school the year after. Y'all played UConn, I think it was. But I never played a 1A school. So I know I'm like bottom of the barrel player. It's like almost D3 in a sense. You know what I mean? Like 1AA that doesn't play a 1A school is in a sense D3. So I knew that I needed somebody to not look at my whole resume and everything. I needed somebody that's going to let me just play football. And if they liked me, they could keep me. And if they didn't like me, I was gone. And that was a situation that the Saints had for me, that they would genuinely not care what I did in my past. They just cared about how I was when I got there.
And obviously that, you know, it's hard to know what would have happened otherwise, but this path seemed to be a pretty good one. And then after the first season, or maybe that's irrelevant, you know, the next time you have to make a decision on what you're going to do, how does that work? Tell me like a little later on in the process.
This is another part of the crazy story. So I had a 3-year contract once I made a team with the Saints. I had a 3-year contract. I ended up playing 3 years. But when the playoffs came, my third year, they cut me after the first playoff game. So this is like a whole new world of waivers. And this is like waivers during the playoffs, which is different than waivers during the season. Waivers during the season is you get released and then you're on waivers. Waivers is pretty much a sheet that tells you every player that's available that got cut this day. And teams have 24 hours to claim them. And you claim them in like draft order. So the worst team has the first chance at getting the best released player. And the best team has the worst chance. So like everybody puts in a bid to see who wants to get this player. So say the Cleveland Browns put in a bid when it was 0-16 to get me. And the Patriots, the year they won the Super Bowl when they were 16-0, were the team that they wanted to put a bid in as well for me, and they wanted to get me as a released player. Every team has a chance to put in a claim for me. Then after the 24 hours is up, it's like a raffle, and somebody in the NFL tells you who these released players are awarded to. And if nobody picks you up, you become a free agent in general. So the way it was set up with the playoffs was that even though I got cut in the playoffs, I was on waivers until the end of the Super Bowl. So I got cut after the first round of the playoffs, and then I was on waivers until February 4th. So it was like January 3rd to February 4th or something like that. So I didn't know. I was in limbo. My contract was expiring. I wasn't assuming anybody was going to pick me up. You know, I thought that, you know, I was going to be a free agent, because who's going to pick up an expiring contract? You know, it makes no sense, you know. So ended up after the Super Bowl, ended up on the waiver, getting picked up by the Detroit Lions off the waiver wire. And the reason why I got picked up by them, because a special teams coach that I had my rookie year with the Saints was a special team coach now with the Lions. And he put in a good word for me with the GM and said, we had to get this player. So I ended up over there. And when I'm at this point, I have to negotiate a new contract now, you know, and at the same point, I'm still in free agency because I don't have to accept it. They claim me on waivers, but in a month, March 3rd, when the new football season starts again, I'm a free agent. You know, so like I'm like negotiating them to give me some money and an opportunity. You know what I mean? That can be beneficial for me. And if the opportunity wasn't there, then I would have to test free agency, because I knew I wouldn't want to be in a situation where I had no chance to make the team. So the Detroit Lions, the situation there was that they just fired their old coach. They're bringing in a new coaching regime. And that's always good for free agents, because nobody's like the coach's guy. Everybody has a chance to show themselves and stuff. So the Detroit Lions wanted me. They offered me a signing bonus. I think it was like $50,000. So just to say, like, you know what, we're going to bring you in. We would have signed you as a free agent anyway, so we're just saying that we're grabbing you off waivers, giving you a signing bonus and a 1-year deal so you can come in, get tryout for our team. Really, it wasn't like you made our team, you had a chance to make it. And I was the last guy on the roster again, you know, like just like I was when I was with the Saints and stuff. So like my whole mindset was like, I need to get to a place where they allow me to use what I learned at the Saints to become the player that I'm supposed to be. And Detroit was completely open forum. Best player played, in a sense. You know, the coach, this Jim Caldwell, was coming in, and Terrell Austin was the defensive coordinator. And my defensive back coach was Alan Williams and stuff, and they were all about perfection and greatness. They Caldwell's with the Colts. They won a Super Bowl. Alan Williams was with the Colts when they won a Super Bowl. Terrell Austin was with the Ravens when they won a Super Bowl. So, like, they had a high standard. And, you know, I always loved that. You know, I always want my coaches to push me to become the best. So, and they also had the ability to play the best player. They didn't have any, like, no loyalty tied to anybody, you know? So it was like, if you're good, you're going to be the one that's going to be on the field. And that was it, you know? So in Detroit, I was able to prove my worth, you know? I was able to have that open tryout in camp. And the starter they had signed in for the season ended up being hurt for the first three games. And I went from the last guy on that roster to starting the first game of the season on Monday Night Football, you know? So it was just like the fact that I was able to know that this was a team that was going to be able to say, you know what, the best player is going to play. And I felt like I was in a position to be in the best player in a position. You know, like, I knew that as a safety that I had the skill set. I learned a lot when I was with the Saints. I know that being cut during the playoffs humbled me like no other. You know what I mean? So I knew that, like, I had one foot out the door in a sense, especially getting cut in the position that I did, you know? So, like, I had, like, a newfound life, and I was able to, like, put it all together when I got to Detroit.
Yeah, so you think that you ended up going to Detroit because the fact that they claimed you off of waivers and gave you that $50,000 was like a sign that they were serious.
That they were seriously going to let me have an open tryout, and whatever happens, happen. If I didn't play well, I would have been on the team. But me playing well played me onto the field. So that's all I looked for, coming out again cut from the Saints. The fact that I'm not going to get judged for anything else. I'm not going to be told who I am. They just allow me to show them who I am.
And you had to make that choice before you tested the open market. So you never even put yourself in the position to hear what other offers might be. So you just kind of like, you're like, this seems like the right thing, and I'm not going to test it. And this is a good opportunity. I'm going to just take it.
Exactly. It was just like everything I wanted. I'm not going to go look for more. All I wanted was an opportunity. And I knew that my money wasn't going to come in free agent battles for $10,000. Like, what, I would have got $60,000 max to right. sign up. That's not what I was looking for. I got in the NFL to get $60 million, you know? It wasn't not trying to be, like, rich. It was just that I want to be that type of player, that my value was of that. I'm not going to be battling for just, like, the small pennies. I want to be able to show that I'm worth way more than this. So, like, I went there saying, like, they were saying, like, look, you come here, prove your worth. And that's all I ever wanted, you know, because that allowed me to show you I was somebody that I haven't been so far. Like, coming out of college, I wasn't this guy. In the New Orleans Saints, I wasn't that guy. But you're allowing me to show you that I am that guy. So that's all I ever wanted.
Yeah, that's so cool. Like, in 3 years like that, it was $5,000, and it was $50,000, and then you kind of kept on going from there. So when they offer you like a 1 year deal, like, I imagine you're in New Orleans for like 3 years, you're probably developing a little bit of a life there. Are you like living year round in New Orleans at the time, or are you only there during the season?
Yeah, I have a townhouse out there, so I was like living there, I had my car and everything.
Okay, and then so you get a 1 year deal with the Lions. Is it like, okay, I'm moving to Detroit, or is it like I'm gonna be up here for a season and then see what happens?
It was essentially I was moving to Detroit, but I knew in my off seasons that I wasn't gonna be in Detroit, you know. But my whole mindset was I'm moving to Detroit because like that's where my job was. I was setting up shop there. This is my life now. Like, I'm not thinking that. I got rid of my New Orleans townhouse. I feel like I put New Orleans behind me and everything like that. I started training in Atlanta in the offseason, so, like, I was there in the offseason, but I was living in Detroit. You know, my mindset was I'm fully here. I'm fully invested in playing for the Detroit Lions.
Gotcha. And then, okay, so then you're there. Were you ended up only there for 1 year, or I felt like maybe it was two?
I played 2 years, yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah. So what happened at the end of the first year? Did you test the free agent market, or did they just sign you? How did that work?
Yeah, so it was another free agent battle. So I played really well this year. I ended up going from the last safety on the roster to end up starting the first three games, and then getting into, like, once the starter came back, getting into, like, rotational packages where they were making packages for me to play. So, like, no, I'm playing really well. So, like, by, like, week 10, week 11 maybe, the GM contacted my agent saying that they want to, like, talk an extension with me. And this is when I started getting into the battle with value and stuff like that, because, mind you, I might have played for $700,000 the year before. And I feel like I proved that I was like very valuable to this team. We ended up making the playoffs. I was 2-1 as a starter. That was like, you know, they probably was afraid that the guy that they signed to come in here to start gets injured, and now they got to play some no-name backup that nobody's heard of. You know, it was like very nerve-wracking, and I gave him the piece of like playing good enough for us to go 2-1 through the stretch or whatever. You know what I mean? And they offered me like 1 year, $1 million, only like $300,000 more, which is like, to me, a slap in the face in a sense, because it's like, all right, I proved that I'm way more than that, you know, and I knew the market for the players in my position was a lot more than that, you know, and it wasn't like 3 million or 4 million. I knew it was 1.5 million. I was a third safety, and the third safeties in the NFL were making 1.5 million on average. And that's what I deserved, because that's the safety that I gave them. When their starter went down, I came in, I filled in and won games. You know what I mean? Like, it was like apparent there. So that gives me the established role as a third safety, knowing that once the starter goes down, that you're safe enough and able to win games with the backup. So that's what you wanted. You know what I mean? So literally the entire offseason, I'm battling to get this $1.5 million. They keep telling me that, oh, no, we don't have the money, because this is the year Sue is up for free agency. Ndamukong Suh is up, and he's supposed to be getting $100 million. And, you know, Detroit's trying to keep him. He's not trying to stay there and stuff like that. And he ended up going to the Dolphins and stuff like that. But, like, you know, they're trying to say they can't find the money for me and I got to take this. And my mindset was, like, look, vet minimum this year might have been, like, $725, you know, for the year I've been playing. And they're only offering me $1 million. My mindset was I'd rather play vet minimum than – play for $1 million and test the market. I'd rather test the market playing for vet minimum and nobody only claiming me for the minimum that I could play for than go play for this team that knows how valuable I am for just $1 million and being set in that. You know what I mean? And you thinking that's who I am and thinking that that's all I'm going to take and that's all I'm ever going to be. So, I ended up communicating that, you know, I'm not settling for this. And when the first day free agency opened, I wasn't signed to anybody. And I'm testing the market. And Ndamukong Suh signs with the Dolphins. Then their agent, their GM gets on the phone with my agent. Oh, we found the money for him. So we end up signing for like, I end up signing for the 1 year, $1.5 million. And now they're like, well, you did all this fighting to get this. You better show up, you know? Yeah. And of course, you know, I had to. Yeah.
Yeah, that's, God, it's like, it's so wild, you know, like, could you imagine, like, when you were 17 years old, if someone had told you, like, that someone was going to offer you a contract for $1 million for a year to play football, and you'd be like, nah.
For real, it was crazy. You know, like, I know back then I would have been jumped on it, but the fact that, like, I was in a place where I learned about it, I learned that I can play here. Like, that year with Detroit was huge on my confidence more than anything. You know what I mean? Knowing that, yo, I have a place in this NFL. I have a place in this league. So it's like for me to prove that to myself and then take so little, take under my market value, then it's almost like me not really trying to make my dream become into fruition. You know? So like I'm like, I got to maximize this. I can't take whatever you're just throwing at me because it's going to be under my value. I need to get at least what my value is. You know, that was like the most important thing for me.
And what's your agent telling you through all this?
I mean, he's telling me the same thing. He's telling me, look, the market value is $1.5 million. He put that in my mind. He's saying that's the only thing you should really be getting at the end of the day. And if not, we're going to go test the market and see if any other team wants to pay you. And if they don't, you pay for vet minimum. You know, it was the whole mindset was more so like, all right, here's the information. What do you want to do? Because I could have easily said, hey, I want to take that $1 million. But my mindset was, no, I want to maximize my value. I'm not trying to take whatever they're giving me and find a security. I want to get as everything I'm supposed to be getting, you know?
Was he saying, like, here's the information, you make the call? Or was he saying, here's the information, this is what I recommend, you make the call?
Yeah, here's what they're giving you, here's what I recommend, you make the call, in a sense. You know, he told me his side of it. He educated me on what it was. I told him how I felt, and then we moved on that.
And did you end up ever, like, testing the market, meaning, like, start getting offers from other teams, or did it not get that far?
It didn't even get that far. It was literally, like, 10 minutes after free agency hit, they found the money for me.
Yeah.
You know? But, like, I tested the market, in a sense. Like, I was in the water. My feet was in the water for 10 minutes, you know? Yeah. So they knew I was serious. Because usually, when you're not serious, you would have broke 2 days, 3 days before. But I was like, I'm fully okay with being a free agent.
Yeah. And then, all right, so one more year goes by and then you're back on the free agent market. Was that like tiring for you to like feel like that you couldn't sign like a longer term deal because you have to go through this mess every time and then go through the stress? I imagine it's stressful.
Yeah, it is, but I was so used to it. I've been on 1 year deals since I've been in the NFL. You know what I mean? Like as an undrafted player, like they could cut you and not pay you and like anything. Like whenever I got cut my first 3 years on the Saints, whenever they cut me, they didn't have to owe me another dollar. You know, so like I'd have been cut and I would have just been a regular guy that had no money. You know what I mean? So like my whole mindset was, all right, I gotta kind of get it. You know what I mean? Like I have to understand that every single year is a 1 year contract. I have to do the best that I possibly can. So like it was just like what I had to do at the time, and it was my mindset anyway. So it wasn't like kind of stressful, but the contract negotiations were always stressful. You know, like that one especially, because that was like, after that 1.5 year and they say, yeah, you prove your worth, you got to prove your worth. I know for a fact I proved my worth. You know what I mean? Like fully, like we were 7-9 that year as a team. And as a starter, I was 7-1. And the only time I lost was a Hail Mary. I remember, I know you know the game, when Aaron Rodgers threw that sky ball and the tight end caught the 70-yard Hail Mary touchdown on Thursday night against the Lions. That was the only game I lost. I was supposed to be 8-0 as a starter. And
you couldn't get your hand in there? What happened?
I don't know. We was in the going in that. That's just that. That was a crazy one, but you know, it was just like I went 7-1. So I proved my worth as like a NFL starter. Regardless of how they seen me, I knew that I felt that I deserved something there. I deserved something. I deserve money in the NFL. You know, so like at the midseason break, we have a bye week and we're like 1-7 at this point. And our owner of a team fires the GM, the team president, and a whole bunch of guys, the vice president, the offensive coordinator. So, like, going after the bye week was, like, a brand new regime. And, like, we had an interim GM, and, like, they made changes on the defense. That's when I started playing more in the second half of the season. The first half of the season, I didn't start. The only game that I started was the game we won. And the second half of the season was when I mainly started the rest of the season and stuff like that. So I ended up playing lights out and literally saving their jobs. I have no problem saying that. And I'm not going to say I did it single-handedly. We did it as a team. But, like, if we didn't win 6 of our last 8 games, they would have been all fired. You know what I mean? But we could have easily been 2-14 that year, 1-15 that year. Yeah, but, you know, when we came in, we changed the culture. We played well. We went 6-2 on the back end. You know what I mean? Like, I went 6-1 as a starter on the back end, you know? So, like, I felt like, you know what? Y'all got to know that I deserve to be here. So, in the offseason, they hire a GM that's coming from the Patriots, you know? So, like, the Patriots have a different philosophy and everything with paying players and value and everything like that. So, when I'm negotiating my contract with them, they're offering me, like, 2 years, $3.8 million with a chance to compete for a starting spot. Mind you, I just played 1 year, $1.5 million. So, that's, like, pretty much playing for, $400,000 more a year, you know, than I was before. And I just proved that I'm a starter and a winner in this NFL, you know. So it was just – I felt completely disrespected. You know, I felt like y'all completely overlooked everything I did for y'all. I know the coaches were talking bad about me in the meetings to make them feel this way. You know what I mean? No, not really telling people how it really was, you know what I mean? So, like, the whole negotiation was, like, I know that I'm not going back to the Detroit Lions. So I know for a fact I'm testing the market and seeing who is interested in me, who thinks I'm worth anything, which was nerve wracking. You know what I mean? Because, like, one, I proved my value with the Lions, and you only can know your value of what you are as an NFL player based on the team you're on until you're a free agent. So, like, from the end of the season, which was like January, till March, which would be the first day that free agents could sign with other teams, I'm just negotiating with the Lions about what my value is. And they're telling me that I'm only worth $400,000 a year more than I was last year. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Which is like an insult to me. I know I did more work than that, you know, like, because I know the work I did from going from vet minimum to getting to 1.5. And that was, I doubled it. You know what I mean? Like, that was doubled up. But now I did way more work and put my resume way bigger than that. And yet you only give me $400,000 more. That's not equal value to me. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't believe that. So, like, the entire time I'm, like, battling them. And this is, like, a tough time because I don't know what else is out there for me. This is the only team in the NFL that's able to tell me my value. So I really might go out there and that might be everything that I'm getting. You know, that might be the best offer that I have. So it was like very nerve wracking. It was very like a tough situation because I knew that I'm not settling for this, but I also knew that this could be the best that I could get, you know? So it was just like I had to come to peace with whatever was going to come of that. But thankfully, you know, once that first day, the teams could call free agents, I started getting a lot of offers. I had, you know, I didn't get offers. I had a lot of interest. You know, I had, the Raiders called me and they were saying, oh yeah, we really want to get you, but we might have to sign this guard. That's a lot of money. So we might have to get somebody else, you know? So like, they ended up signing that guard. He was like $16 million a year, which was cool. But the Dolphins were called and they were like, we want you. Here's this amount. We're going to give you this and we want you to be here. We love the way he plays. And it ended up being the starter contract that I wanted. It was 3 years, $12.75 million. And like, they would pretty much tell me, you're going to come in here, you're going to be a starter, you're going to show your impact, you're going to be able to be the player that you ever always wanted to be, you know? And it was just like the biggest relief because I felt for the first time that I was seen, like, wow, people really finally realized that, damn, I'm worth something in the NFL, you know? So it was like amazing to like get my value in the free agent market.
And is it just like all that happens in a day, or is it like, does how drawn out is that process? Like once free agency starts?
So 2 days before the actual free agency period where people can sign hits, I think 2 days or 1 day or something like that, teams can start calling and like, you know, setting contracts. So by the time free agency opens, you're just reporting signatures and, you know what I mean? People sign and reporting contract details and everything like that. So it was just like, the whole offseason, I'm lost. And then it was like 2 days before or a day before free agency starts. That's when I start feeling the interest. And that's when I knew that I was going to be off the market even when free agency started, because I had a contract set even before the free agent period started. You know what I mean? So it was, by the day before free agency, I was already off the market.
Gotcha. So you have like that day or 2 days. Are the Dolphins the only people that came to you with a starter deal?
Well, the thing was that, like, I got my money so fast, you know, like, usually people wait it out. There was a lot of safeties on the market, and I don't know what the safety market was this year, but usually, like, the bigger safety's name gets signed first, and then they set the number of what safeties are getting paid, and then everybody gets kind of paid off of them, you know. But, like, the Dolphins offered me a contract that was very worthy of what I thought my value was close to, you know what I mean, everything like that. So, like, I didn't even get to the point where like I had to worry about other people's value. You know, I just got my value straight from the team, and I was signed before the value of a safety was set for this particular offseason.
Yeah, I got to imagine that if one team is willing to sign you basically as a starter, almost any team in the league would have you at some level. And so like, I guess what you're saying is that you think that if you continued to wait for like that pecking order to play out, that maybe like something else could have come along and you would have had something to compare it against, but you felt like what you were being offered was fair and you were ready to go.
Yeah, fully. I mean, my agent was able also to paint out what the market is for this year, because depending on who the free agents are, it's depending on how much they're going to be getting paid. So say Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers are all free agents this year. The quarterback market is through the roof. You know what I mean? But say it's like Blake Bortles, Josh Allen, and I don't know, somebody else that's like the Jameis Winston are like the best quarterbacks out. The market's going to be set at something, so they're all going to be paid based off of that. Tom Brady and them, $30, $20 million a year. Jameis and Blake Bortles, maybe $5 million a year. You know what I mean? So like the safety that was there, they were like around the same as me, maybe like $7 million would have been the max that they would have got paid, you know? And I knew where I was coming from. I was a third safety, just proving that I'm a starter, that they're not going to give me this $7 million, but I need to get something that's established as a starter, which was I ended up getting with $4.25 a year.
Yeah. You're like, you're signing that like entry level starter package, not like the all pro package.
Exactly. Proving myself still, which I understood that. I had to prove that I could put an entire season together. And I didn't think that, oh, yeah, y'all better pay me what these guys are paid. Because I needed to show you that I can do it throughout the course of a season and win and not just be there and like make mistakes and just be a player there. Like, I wanted to show you that we could win, like, you know?
Yeah. Well, all that stuff is super interesting, and appreciate you taking me through it a little bit. I had one other thing I wanted to ask you about, and I don't have a good segue to it, so I'm just gonna go out and ask. I don't know what made me think about this lately, but I've been thinking about it is, you know, around the country, Canada, all these places, like, they're legalizing marijuana. And I always, like, wondered, I always had, like, a sense of what I thought, like, the drug culture was like inside of teams. And I was just curious for you as, like, a player's perspective, maybe, like, both in the NFL and at college, like, obviously people are drinking, like, I get, like, all that. And I imagine that there's, like, a handful of guys that are doing other things. I was just curious, like, what you ever thought of that or what you saw. And, you know, I mean, I don't need like names or anything like that, but I'm just like curious what that's like.
Yeah. I mean, when in college, I didn't do anything. I mean, I drank and partied and stuff like that, but I wasn't ever going to do anything that was going to mess up my football career. So like, I knew that we had random drug tests and all that stuff in college. So I wasn't doing anything like that. You know, people did, cause people like have their things from growing up, and that's what it mainly is. You know, people have like the way of life that they came from, you know. And in the NFL, like, marijuana is a huge culture, and it's understood how to beat the system in a sense. You know, like with the NFL, you get recreational drug tested one time a year, and it's between April and August, and once you get tested that one time, it's gone. But you know, a lot of players in the NFL use it for medicinal purposes because, I mean, we're beating ourselves up badly every day. Like, are beating our brains in, you know, beating our bodies up. And, like, we don't want to take opiates. We're not trying to take some Percocets. We're not going to try to take all these pills that's going to kill our liver and make us feel worse and make us addicted, you know. So, like, a lot of players ended up taking in cannabis, you know what I mean, because it's the easiest way for you to be able to deal with this pain and actually heal yourself, you know, because there's healing properties. People use CBD as well, because CBD has concussion healing properties as well, you know what I mean? So, like, people in the NFL, I think that there's a bigger demographic of players that are really conscious about their health. There are some wild guys that are really wild and that do the drugs and that go crazy and, you know, always gonna be doing wild stuff. But, like, I would say 75 to 80% of the locker room is extremely conscious of what they're putting in their body. So, like, a lot of people made a conscious decision to choose cannabis over opiates to deal with the pain that they was dealing with.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you think that there's like certain type of demographic, meaning like certain positions or, you know, people that are coming from big schools or small schools, or like, do you think that there's a difference in, is there a division in the locker room at all over like issues like that? Or is it just kind of like everyone does their own thing and you don't really see it that way?
I think everybody did their own thing. And I mean, I would say like 75% of the people on the team ingested cannabis in some way. You know what I mean? Because not just for like just to sound, seem cool and have a vice, but genuinely the healing properties. You know what I mean? Like, even the people that were like educated Stanford guys that you wouldn't think that would do anything that was hurt their body would do it because they knew that it helped them. You know what I mean? And the main thing about like the locker room, even with the guys that was crazy and partying and coming in drunk and smelling like alcohol, all we cared about was how you showed up on Sunday. Right. If you could do this all week, but if this was getting in the way you playing on Sunday, then you're not a good teammate. But if you're doing this all week and then you can show up and be a good teammate on Sunday, then we're going to let you live your life. Granted, we might talk about how that's not being very like beneficial for you or the team, but as long as you're not hurting the team on Sunday by your behavior throughout the week, then we really can't tell you what to do.
Yeah, I mean, as a coach, I was always like, I always thought that I didn't want our players to be doing drugs, mostly because like you could get caught and then that would just be like a whole thing that would hurt you in your career and your school. And like, but like realistically, if I had my choice, like if our players would like be going out and getting hammered and all the decisions that come after that versus guys that are going to get high, like I would much prefer the second one.
Exactly.
But it's, you know, as a coach, you really can't, I feel like you're never in a position where you could say that. And honestly, like, truthfully, you just want your players to act reasonably and responsibly, to take care of themselves, to take care of each other, to act in a way that they're setting a good example for, like, the campus and, you know, they're putting the program in the best possible light. Like, that's what it is. And as long as they're doing that, like, if there are, you know, if they're also having fun, that's great, right? But you just want to make sure that they're not crossing those lines. Like, that's how I always felt as a coach. As a player, did you ever like feel like you were like friends or teammates with people that you thought were crossing those kind of lines? And like, how do you react to that? Do you feel like it's just like none of your business, or it's too hard to get involved, or like you sit people down and like try to straighten them out?
I mean, I've definitely had a lot of guys like that. I mean, just the position I was in being young in the NFL, you know, 70% don't make it, you know, probably more than that. So like a lot of it is because of choices that they make and things that they put in priority and things like that. So, you know, I had conversations with people, but people are so stuck in their ways, especially at this level, that they got to the NFL. They feel like their process got them there. So you can't tell me nothing, you know, no matter if it's hurting them while they're there already. So like I would do my due diligence and say like, yo, like, you know, you kind of looking crazy here, or like, yo, you know, this is not helping you. You're not really playing well, and you continue to do this. It's kind of a pattern there. But they were like, I've been doing this all my life, so blah, blah, blah. I'm going to be good, you know? So but so much I can say, and I had to be more in control of myself than them, because, I mean, most of the time when I'm talking to people like this, they're already in positions that they're already solidified. They felt they were drafted. They were already inked into the opening day roster. So, like, they already on the roster, and I'm an undrafted guy. I got to make the team every year. I can't really tell them much, you know? So let them do them, but learn from their lessons too, you know?
What about in college? Did you feel differently?
The people I was around in college, we didn't do anything to get in trouble. Like, we were always hanging out. There were people that we in my class that were, but our whole thing, we wasn't like getting together and causing trouble. If somebody was like wilding, I would say something and we would get them in line and we would be straight, because our whole mindset was like football, team, winning, you know, like, well, the clique that people I hung out with, not necessarily everybody on my team, but the people that I was around was more so about putting the team before themselves. So we didn't have many people in my circle that had vices that were detrimental to us.
Yeah. And as a player, I'm kind of curious from a coach's perspective, what do you think the coaches don't know about what's going on? Like, just curious.
I don't know. I really feel like coaches understand like everything that the players are going through. They just don't want it to touch their desk. You know what I mean? Like I know that all the coaches knew what guys smoked weed, what guys was the trouble, but all they cared about was it not coming across their desk, you know? So I never thought the coaches put anything past us, you know? So like, I never really thought about that, though.
I bet the coaches knew less than you thought about who used and who didn't.
And I think that's what probably my mindset as a player, thinking that the coaches always know, because I knew, you know what I mean? But I never really looked at it from the other side of it, of what the coaches knew that we didn't know they knew, you know, or we didn't know, you know?
Yeah, I would say, like, as a coach, I would say that I would have thought that probably, like, 90% of the guys are drinking, right, like on a weekend, and probably 10% of them are just really not drinkers for one reason or another. And probably like half of them, or maybe like 25% to half of them, are using other drugs, at least on occasion, whether weed or otherwise. I think that if I took, you know, I could take some guesses, but I'd probably be wrong like a decent chunk, you know, would there be some like high probability candidates? I guess that surprises you that like coaches don't really know?
Yeah, I think coaches know the guys that affected badly by it. You know what I mean? And that's what we need to know about. The ones that performance is being affected by it. Their look and life, their morale is being affected by it. So, like, those are the ones that the coaches do. But I feel like there's a lot of guys that, like, incorporated things like that into their lifestyle that they were still a good player. They were still responsible. They were still accountable. They still studied, and they were still smart players. But they did this. So that was like the dynamic that people didn't know about. And there was probably a lot of guys that people didn't know about. But I think that the people that you needed to know about doing drugs, you knew about, you know?
Yeah. And I'd hope that that at least the players that I coach would feel like that I cared more than just whether or not it came across my desk, but that I cared that they were happy and healthy and that they were treating other people well. Yeah. Whether or not they actually got caught or it was going to become like a headache for me. Like I wanted the best for my players.
Yeah. I mean, for sure. You know, I mean, most of the time players are going to do what's the best for themselves, and sometimes it won't be the right thing, you know, and it's going to be some aggressive mistakes being made and stuff, you know. But like most of the time, people, especially, I don't know, I could just speak from Fordham and my perspective there. Most of the time, I feel like people weren't really, like, in a sense, putting themselves before the team. And, yeah, we had a situation where players were a certain way and stuff like that, but not many people, like, say, you know what, I'm just going to do all the drugs and get suspended, or I'm going to start this fight and get kicked off the team. Everybody wanted to protect playing football. So, like, people would push the limits as far as they could, you know, but, like, everybody wanted to be on that field, you know?
Yeah, and when you got to the NFL and you started meeting people from all sorts of different programs and places, did you get the sense that your experience, at least in that regard, like what, like that, you know, players were like, was different at other places? Or do you think it's kind of just that's just the culture at most places?
It was definitely different. You know, like the way people at Fordham, I feel like football was 1A and school was 1B, or it might have been school was 1B and football was 1A, you know, or school football was 1B and school was 1A. But in the NFL, you could tell these guys was football first. You know what I mean? They were always told that from the time they were 10 years old to the time they were in the NFL, that football comes before school, football comes before everything, you know? So, like, there was a completely different mindset, you know, a mindset that I thought coming out of high school I was going to be, like, a part of football first, you know, academic advisor is going to help me pass my classes, and I just care about playing football, like, you know? But that's the demographic I met in the NFL. Opposed to, like, in school, like, most of our conversations were, like, debates on different things going on in the world, different opinions on how we felt about growing up. It was more intellectually based, you know, our conversations and our environment and our interactions. But, like, in the NFL, everything, football. So, you know, it was just, like, a bit of a culture shock, because my experience of being on a football team was not always talking about football, but on this football team I was on in the NFL, which was like almost all of them, was, you know, talking about football and football being the main and only important thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Fordham is probably like not the best representative sample of just like in general, because the people that are going there are both usually, like, first of all, like, going to get in. So that means that they, like, put academics as at least enough of a priority when they were in high school. And also, they're choosing for, you know, a lot of them are choosing Fordham versus other schools because of that bend that it has, that academic bend. Yeah. I felt like when I coached at Rutgers that there was a mix. There were people that, like, really did value, like, that had still had that 1A, 1B type of experience, like whether or not it was football was the 1A or football was the 1B. Like, there was, like, I think a lot of people that were like that. And then there were also a lot of people that were, I only care about football. The only reason why I'm going to school is so I can stay eligible and play football. And that was like, that was it. They didn't care at all. Where, like, you definitely did not get really that so much at Fordham, maybe like a tiny bit, but very little. But I think that could be true, like, regardless of level. Just it depends on the culture and the type of people that are going to that place, I think.
Yeah, but I just think that, like, in the NFL, the demographic is mostly people that only cared about football. And that's, like you said, in the locker room, there was still a lot of 1A, 1B guys, a lot of guys that had the head on right, that understood the perspective of football was just a part of their life. But I would say, like, the vast majority of the guys that, you know, get all the commercials, the guys that people buy jerseys of and stuff, football is everything, and nothing else mattered. Nothing else had to matter, because football always the only thing that mattered, you know? So I came across that a lot more than I did, you know, obviously in college.
I wonder what causes what, like, or if it's something else, but is it that, like, there's the reason why they got to be as good as they got is because they had that one track mind towards football? Or is it that because they were so good at football for so long that it was always clear that that was what they needed, that was their ticket, and so that is what caused their focus to be that way?
I honestly think it was more environment. I feel like in the environments that they grew up, football mattered. Football was really important. Like, from Pop Warner, the coaches was in the high school was worrying about the development of those young players and running the system and backpedaling correctly and having the technique correct. And so there were certain guys that like rose to the top, being the cream of the crop in these football places like Texas, Georgia, Florida, you know, in the South, Louisiana. There's different places like, you know, that these California, where if you're in those certain programs and stuff, where like if you're good, if you're good, they put the tools in front of you to become a fully complete player and make you say, all right, you have the talent and the technique. We're going to make you think about football 24/7. So I think that happens more, that people came out of these environments where football was the most important thing and that their talent was able to be cultivated in this place. And they felt important there and people made them be important there and they felt value there. So it was like perfectly fine for them to just be a football player because they was accepted by society as being a football player. You know what I mean? But for where I came from, high school, I didn't have that. Like, I was like one of two guys on my high school that went to college to play football. And it was like, our Pop Warner, our coaches had no idea who's playing Pop Warner. High school coaches had no idea. They didn't care. Like, you know, there wasn't like a system. They didn't really teach technique. It was just like the best players out there. We played like running the ball 90% of the time. It was like option football. Like, you know what I mean? Like where I came from and stuff. So it wasn't, I didn't really have that football farm mentality. It was just more so of, I played football and I was good at it. So I didn't really, like, my world wasn't wrapped around being good at football because my world around me wasn't football.
Yeah, well, it doesn't hurt that football is more fun than spelling, so people are just going to want to do it more.
For real.
And somebody, if someone tells you, like, oh, you don't worry about spelling.
Yeah.
Football is good. You know, like, you're good at it. And you're like, okay. Like, you're not fighting that, you know?
Exactly. And, you know, some people knew that education was important because they knew that it wasn't going to be all football. But it was the fact that they had the ability to maximize their potential within the sport because they had all the access around them, all the people that wanted to see them do well around them, you know. So, like, and they were told that they were doing a good thing and they would get the scholarship offers and they would get, like, rivals, 5 stars and all this stuff, you know. So, and it made sense because, like, all these college coaches went there to see these players because they know they have a system that works. So why not go find players from these places? And these players got this mindset that football is the only thing that matters. And it's brainwashed in a sense, you know what I mean? Because you kind of only see your value in that. But, like, at the end of the day, you got to maximize your potential. And I was always a bit jealous of guys like that, you know, that were, like, that love football and was able to, like, grow up in a place where they were loved for playing football and taught everything that they were needed, you know?
Yeah. That's interesting. I, like, from my perspective, I feel like you were the lucky one.
Yeah.
You got to still, like, experience, like, the highest level of football, but you didn't have to sacrifice developing your mind in a way. Like, no one took that away from you, that opportunity to, like, develop your mind or, like, convince you, like, to avoid it. And so now you just got both. Whereas, like, they got one.
Exactly. And, you know, in hindsight, I'm way happier that I went the way that I went. You know, because I love the stories that I tell. I feel passionate about what I speak about, what I went through, and I'm happy that it happened. You know, but, you know, at the time, that was my mindset. Like, damn, I wish I was football 24/7 and that was my life and stuff like that. But you're right. You know, I really feel like I was blessed to have the better way because I was be able to make myself a football player and a whole person at the same time.
Yeah. And, I wonder, this is how I would picture it. I wonder if you think this is true, but that when you get to the NFL, the only people that are there for the most part anyway are the people that, like, football is really important to them and it's, like, a big deal and they're really focused on it because, like, otherwise you just don't get there. But that, like, people's, like, bend towards academics is a little different. Like, it's just, like, runs the gamut. There's probably people that are, like, way interested at it, like, in the very top, and people that are less interested in it, like, at the very bottom. And it's just like a normal group of people. It's not like they're way less into, like, academics or that kind of thing than a normal person, but it's just, like, you get everyone.
Yeah. Nah, yeah, I get what you mean. You know what I mean? Like, but, I mean, at this, when it comes to it, it is down to that. Like, your love for it and your interest with it and your talent kind of tying into it is going to make you there. So, like, the more you love it, the more chances you are going to get there, right? You know what I mean? Like, if you love football and you have, like, the talent to do it and everybody around you is letting you be the best football player, you know, you're more apt to be at this level. But if you have the talent to play football and, like, you kind of love football but nobody's trying to help you get there, you know, you're not going to be at that level necessarily. Or if you don't love football and you don't have the talent to get there, you're never going to get into that mindset of always being one-track minded with football, you know? So, like, it's a beauty there too, in the simplicity of the fact that you find something you love so early, you get cultivated, you get people to help you get better in it, then you get a career in it, you can pay your bills for life, then even after you're done playing, you can come and commentate, you can coach, you could do all of this stuff. So, you know, it's like, you can't be upset with people that went through that because there's a whole life there for them. You know, it's like a guy born on a farm. You don't want him to, you don't necessarily upset that he didn't get the education of a Harvard kid. You understand that, you know, he had a simple life that he loves. He gets to feed himself. He gets to sell his food. He needs to get everything fine. But you don't feel bad for the farmer because he doesn't get the same opportunity as the Harvard grad. You know, it's just like, at the end of the day, this guy dedicated his life to farming. He's happy doing it, you know? So it's just like, you know, it's a give and take. I think it's more preferential on who you are. If you feel like you're more than a player, more than just like a football player, more just than just a farmer, then you need to do more than that. But if you're just content with what you're doing, then there's nothing wrong with that at all, you know?
Yeah, well, so, you know, you got the ear of tons of high school athletes right now. What was it? What would you tell them? Well, what do you want to tell them?
What I want to tell you is that no matter what, if you have a goal, like, find another way. You know what I mean? There's another way. That people are going to tell you certain things that, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that. You're too small to play this. You don't have enough of this or that. You know, like, there's a way for everything. I went from undrafted. I went from one scholarship offer in college. I mean, in high school, from Fordham University, that's not even a football school, that was a need-based scholarship, you know, to the NFL where I made starter money. And people throughout the whole time told me, Issa, you need to find another job. Issa, you need to do this. Issa, you sure you still want to play football? Even going into college, I almost didn't know if I was going to go to a college first. I thought I was going to go to prep school or JUCO to get to where I was because my offer came late, you know? So it was like, I knew that I wanted to play football. I had a dream. I wanted to go to the NFL. I wanted to play at the highest level. The main thing that kept me there was the fact that I never lost sight of that, no matter what they told me I was. You know, no matter what they told me my value was, no matter what they told me what I can do or not, I made sure that I knew that I wanted to do what I wanted to do.
Yeah, what you just said there reminded me of something I said last time on the podcast, and I'll repeat it because I think it's so important, is you have to figure out what you want. You have to figure out what's true. And then you have to make a plan to achieve your goal in light of what's true. So, like, you know, like, there's nothing that, like, there's very few things that even if they're true, they can on their own stop you from reaching your goal. You know, you just gotta understand what those things are so you can overcome them.
Yeah, for real. You know, it's even like getting your mind blindly set on something. You know, you don't even have to have a plan because I had a plan. I wrote my plan my freshman year in high school on the wall of what I was gonna do. I thought I was gonna be 100 tackles my sophomore year of high school. Then my junior year, I was going to be a number one recruit coming out because I had like 200 tackles. It was like all this stuff on the wall. I planned out what I wanted it to be. And, you know, obviously none of that happened. I didn't get any of the scholarship offers, any of the accolades that I thought I was going to get. You know what I mean? But, you know, I thought I was going to – I needed to have that plan. But the fact that I knew that I wanted to play football and when I deferred from that plan and didn't go that way, I didn't lose sight of me being that player still. I always thought, you know what, I'm going to be able to figure it out and I'm going to – It might not go the way I wanted it to be, but at the end of the day, I'm going to be exactly what I said I was going to be. And that's what ended up happening. You know, like my career did not go any way that I ever thought it wanted to. I thought it was going to be like, I thought that when I was a kid, I was going to be all pro first round draft pick and all the way through, even up to my senior year of high school. You know, none of that. Like I went to got humble going to Fordham University, thinking as a football player mindset, you know what I mean? And I didn't still let that like take me away from going. My whole time there, my mindset was I'm going to the NFL, you know, from a school where what maybe one or two, three guys went before me. I didn't care. That was my mindset. My goal was set. Like regardless of where I went through on my path, my goal was set in stone, you know, and I wasn't letting it happen. I wasn't letting my life go without that happening.
Well, cool. Issa, thanks so much. I'm excited about the video series that you're going to do with us and getting that message out. I'm excited that I got you again here on the podcast. I learned so much this episode and just so great to talk to you and to see you and you know, can't wait to do it again.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me, man. I'm excited to drop these videos, man. You know, this is one of the things I'm passionate about, you know, giving back and giving back the information that I learned.
Well, perfect. Thanks, Issa.
All right. Thank you, man.
Thanks for listening. Issa gets his honest view out there, and it comes from someone that's been there. That's invaluable. I hope you have people in your lives that are honest and that you value it. And I hope you have people in your life that you can be honest with and they appreciate you for it. Truth is the path to understanding reality and unlocking your potential. If you're enjoying this podcast or our articles on the Recruiting Academy, share it. I'll see you next time.